his portrayal of truth. He also focuses in on 7 specific miracles that Jesus performs over his mission here on earth. He starts with turning the water into wine and progresses to feeding 5,000, and then on to Peter walking on the water. And he culminates in chapter 11 with his most dynamic miracle, the raising of Lazarus from the dead. The religious leaders have fought for the power and the hearts of their nation, each step of the way opposing this truth and this light. And now they see themselves in a position of losing what they love the most. The loss of the hearts, the loss of the money, the loss of the respect, the loss of anything and everything that they can get from the people. It has come to a head. Lazarus was the last straw. And so let me give you just the last few verses of chapter 11. So we move to there. Yeah. 11. Then one of them named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. He had seen Lazarus. He had seen the people flocking to Jesus to see, to observe, to take in the power and divinity that he offered. So they got together. They rendered a verdict. A sentence has been announced. All they need in the last week is a defendant and a trial to make it all work together. Okay. So from that day on, they made plans to put Jesus to death. Jesus, therefore, no longer walked openly among the Jews, but went from there to the region near the wilderness, to a town called Ephraim, and there he stayed with his disciples. Jesus knew of the actions. The actions were out on the street. He was not surprised at the verdict. He was not surprised at the sentence. For he had told his disciples, as he has told others, that he must come to the death on the cross, that he must give up his life so that others could live. However, he also realized that it had to be on his terms. It had to be the timing that would honor his father, honor the prophets, honor all that he knew about since the beginnings and before the beginnings of the earth. It would be done according to his timetable and not the Pharisees and not the others. He would not be taken in public until he was ready to be taken on his timetable. So many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. They were looking for Jesus and saying to one another as they stood in the temple, "What do you think, that he will not come to the feast at all?" So we have the three parties. Jesus, knowing he has to come and march in and perform and come to his death on the cross. We have the religious leaders who have the guns, who have the power, who have everything that they need, they believe, to finally crush this person who's gotten in their way. We have that battle coming to a head, and we have the people observing. Maybe 1 million people flocking in for the Passover, the time that the lamb will be slaughtered. and they're ready to observe. Is Jesus going to give it up? Is he going to take what the religious leaders have laid down as his final threat? Is he going to give up his mission? Has what he told us for naught? Or is he going to show up and defy what the world would tell him and complete his mission for the people? Now, the chief priests and the Pharisees had given orders that if anyone knew where he was, he should let them know so that they might arrest him. The word is on the street. With the focus and the attention of Jesus ready to march into his final week, probably the most toughest week that anyone here could ever imagine. The pain of rejection, the physical pain of the beatings, the time on the cross, he's ready to finalize it. His thoughts are focused. He's ready to march. And smack dab in the middle of it, we go to chapter 12. Where he stops just a few miles short of Jerusalem, just a few hours short of the cross, and he has dinner. And in this dinner, he comes across an event that Mark describes as truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. As great as his mission is, as much a sacrifice as he's ready to give, as much time and focus as he has, he stops, has dinner, and comes up and says, an event that I saw, that I experienced, that was done in this dinner, will travel wherever the gospel goes. As wherever my story is told, this event will be honored with it. So let's look at what is of great importance that Jesus focused in on and carried with him and says will be survived. We're talking about 2,000 years later along with the gospel. John 12. Thank you for the long introduction. 6 days. That's before the Passover. He has 6 days left before his time on the cross. Jesus therefore came to Bethany, just a few miles short of Jerusalem, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave him a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. Picture an evening of maybe his last public supper, maybe his last time to recline and be with friends. And he chose to come, and Mark adds to this, to actually a different house, to a Simon the leper's house. Okay? But he is reclining and enjoying the friendship and love of those who he has ministered and have ministered to him through his life. And Martha is in her role. She's in the kitchen, cooking dinner, serving plates, making sure everyone has got what they need, serving the Lord in the capacity that she knows how to serve him. And as great as service is to the Lord and the amount of time and effort that people put into, and he comes down, he did not pick Mary or Martha in her service as what would be rendered honorable throughout history. We have Lazarus, a great friend, a love of Christ, a man who had been raised from the dead, a man who had seen Christ give him life and now was repaying it with fellowship and probably witness. Probably the questions to Lazarus of how was it when you were there for 4 days in the grave? What happened when you came up? How did it occur? And he would supply the answers. But God didn't choose, or Jesus didn't choose, to say, I'm going to honor forever fellowship, concern, and witness. Because as they are there reclining with dinner, probably similar, if you wanted to picture it, like a good Baptist potluck. Okay? And folks are looking at that centerpiece off to the side, silently probably, unnoticed at first, but Mary enters the room with an alabaster jar in her hands and approaches Jesus. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment, made from pure nard, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. Now, we weren't in Roman times, eh? And it's sometimes hard to understand exactly what she had in her hands, what it was and the size. What does a pound of expensive ointment look like? Okay? So, if you will, this is not an alabaster jar. Okay? It is a jar that was probably very similar to the shape and size that Mary brought into the room. Alabaster jar would probably have a thinner neck, okay? But it would hold about 11 or 12 ounces of material. And it would have a very thin neck with probably a little hole on the end of it, probably similar to maybe a perfume bottle, aftershave bottle, something that when you tipped it over and poured it out, you would get a drop or two, okay? Because that's all you needed, okay? That was enough to scent you for the day, to get you refreshed, to make sure that what you had carried with you. And so many times when guests would enter a house and they would provide the water to wash their feet, or they would anoint their head, they would take a drop or two and put it in the water so that there was enough scent in there to make it pleasant, to relieve the stress, relieve the dust and the hard feelings of walking for miles. Okay? What is pure nard that would fill this bottle? Okay? Nard was taken from a flower, the roots of a flower, that grew in the highest regions of the Himalayas, northern India. It would be taken and those roots crushed and vented and added with water to make a very scented perfume. To get that perfume from the Himalayas by camel, by mule, by foot, down to where we are in Jerusalem would make it extremely costly. Okay? That's what Mary had in her hands, and she approached Jesus. And uncharacteristically, rather than taking a drop or two and anointing or touching his feet, right, she poured She broke her bottle. She poured it all on Jesus. Can you imagine those those in the room standing up, straining to see, experiencing the wafting of scent going throughout that room. What is she doing? She further exasperates their thoughts by kneeling at Jesus' feet, unbraiding her hair, and wiping it off his feet. And maybe that's not much for today. We have women unbraiding their hair or putting it there. But in that time, for a woman to unbraid her hair and put it out freely and flowing to anyone other than her husband in a private time was unheard of. It was probably even thought in certain circles to be immoral to show, to take what Paul described as the glory of women and take it down and show it to the public. And then she further goes beyond that and takes that glory, that fame, that peace, and applies it to the dirty, dusty, clammy, smelly feet of Jesus. She took everything she had, probably her most valuable piece or things in her life. Most likely she had earned it or brought it into her life so that it could be her dowry or maybe her long-term inheritance. But whatever, it would have fully affect the rest of her life. And she broke it and poured it out and followed that with breaking every known way to act, to be sociable, to be right in the world, from the world's means, and applied it to Jesus' feet. Jesus probably stood or sat and reclined in a way that caught Mary's eyes. What would make Mary do this? I'll answer that here. She got it. She had interacted with Jesus in three different times, we're told in the Bible. Each time, she came and she saw and learned at the same place, always described as being at Jesus' feet. The first time we see Jesus and Mary together is the first dinner she has with the three, Lazarus, Martha, and Mary. When Martha comes out and complains that Mary is not doing what a good woman, a good person would do. She's not helping with dinner. She's not helping with the service. Jesus, do something about that. And Jesus says, Mary is doing what is good. She is at my feet, learning, listening, getting it. The second time we see Mary is when Jesus comes to raise her brother Lazarus. When she thinks all hope may be lost, he's been in the grave for 4 days. And in her sorrow and in her pain, she comes and falls again at Jesus' feet. And with every ounce that she has, she knows and looks and sees the power of Jesus in over death itself. She gets the picture. And now she probably has heard, like everyone else on the street, the time is coming and Jesus has come to her house, and it may be the last time that Mary sees her, sees Jesus. And she does, as Mark says, what she can. She sees that for the fourth time, that his message that he is the way, the truth, and the light, that he has power over death, and that he himself must go to the cross and give up his life, beyond anyone else in that room, beyond the 12 disciples who were next to him for 3 years, who still don't fully understand what's going to happen. Mary understands. And she takes whatever she has, whatever worth she has in her life, financially, reputationally, no matter what anyone else would say or would do, she had to show her worth, her understanding of how valuable Jesus was to her. And so she took everything she had and poured at his feet. Is it recognized by the others? The 12 disciples, led by Judas, but Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples who was about to betray Jesus, said, "Why was not this ointment sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" Why not? Isn't that a good thing to do with money? How much money was that? That day you would probably earn a denarii for a full day's work. Okay? So if you paid 300 denarii or earned 300 denarii, it was probably about the equivalent of a year's salary. Okay? So if you can imagine yourself or watching someone take a year's salary, break it, throw it down, let it puddle on the ground, let it be, in our words, wasted. What would you experience? Was it worth it? Couldn't it be used elsewhere? Mark and Matthew chime in that Judas was not the only one who had these feelings, that the other 11 disciples were murmuring and talking and saying the same thing. They didn't get it. They had been with Jesus for 3 years, and yet they were still in a mode of being with someone because he is doing what I think should be done. He is a God that is made out of my image. He is a God that surely does not have to die. He is a God that supplies and is good to have around, and I'm with him while he's doing what I want him to do. Many of them will face that same question here in a week. Okay? Judas himself will make that decision very shortly. Okay? Because he said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus was there and he was with him so that Judas could enjoy the fruits of the money bag. Okay? He got what he wanted. And now, as Jesus is starting to talk about ending his own life, Judas is seeing probably the greatest outlay at any one time that he had ever seen in the 3 years he had been with Jesus. What would it have meant to have 300 denarii a year's wages put in my money bag? I could even give 10% to the poor. I would still leave 90% to do with what I may. It had to be a waste to do and walk away and see it wasted at the feet. Very shortly, within a few days, Judas will put his own value on what Jesus meant to him. He'll settle for 30 pieces of silver. Roughly the amount that the Old Testament says is what you would do to replace a servant who might have gotten gored by your bull. His decision, his value was quite different than what Mary had placed. So Jesus, seeing the tension rise in the room, the looks of despair, the looks of what are you going to do, Jesus? Aren't you going to tell Mary that it is much better to do all of these other things than to honor you? Jesus said, leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. That's a little bit hard to interpret, okay? Because she didn't keep the perfume. Okay? She did keep her thoughts and her passion. But in Mark and Matthew, it says, so she may anoint me for my burial. She had one last time that she would probably see the most important, the most worthy person in her life. One that she, with word on the street, knows that may end here in another 5 or 6 days. And through that, she took her one opportunity and anointed Jesus. Now, if you remember, as he was taken down from the cross and placed into his tomb, it was very late coming upon the Sabbath, and he didn't get anointed for his burial. And so after the 3 days in the grave, the ladies came and rushed to the grave with the ointments and others to anoint his body. And he wasn't there. So waiting to do that would be a missed opportunity. Waiting until everything was perfect and right would have been a wasted opportunity. He alludes then, says, for the poor you will always have with you, but you do not have me always. I can see him looking into Judas's eyes and saying that. This is your opportunity to show worth to your God. So looking at Mary and Judas, they both pursued it not out of stoic duty or responsibility or whatever, but out of the same inner passion. They both were looking for the thing that would make them, bring them the most joy. What was it that would fill their heart and make them sing in the morning? Okay. To Mary, as Jesus' first parable found, he was the pearl in the field. He was to her worth giving up everything that she had to go and own and to be a part of that pearl she found. To Judas, the world could offer much more happiness. The world could offer much more to him than Jesus. Sometimes the world comes to us and offers us things that look, feel more worthy than what we give to God. And out of our passion, far too often we pursue them at the loss of honoring our God. So what do we learn from this exchange, this value of worship? I'll go over quickly. Extravagant love, extravagant worth, placement of Jesus in our lives is going to be costly. And in three areas, it may be very costly. It may be costly, as she said, financially. She took a year's wages, her dowry, her inheritance, and threw it at his feet. Talking about money and value and worth sometimes is a tough thing to do. But I looked at kind of a sobering set of statistics as we put this together. And in a nation that calls itself Christian, where 85% or more will declare their allegiance to the Lord, on an annual, a weekly basis, the average Christian in America provides $17 for Jesus' work. The average American spends $20 a week on coffee. Okay. We assess the words of our mouth and the actions of our body. And some would say, I don't have enough. I can't do that. What I give God is my time. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, down, the amount of time on a daily basis that the average American provides to religious duties or portrayals is 3 minutes a day on average. Okay. TV is 3.5 hours on average. And this last year, these, for the first time, outpaced TV. 3.75 hours a day on average to these. David was faced in the Old Testament with a choice when he came to a small field, the place on Mount Zion that he would ultimately have the temple built. And he found a threshing floor owned by a different person, a fellow by the name of Arana, if I pronounced it right. And Arana said, I would love to have you take this land and make it into a place where we can honor the Lord and sacrifice to Him. It's yours. Take it. It's free. David said, no, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. How many of us would say, what a great deal? What a great deal that I am getting for free that I can then give to my Lord. Extravagant love is costly. It might cost you socially. Okay? Mary anointed the head and the feet and wiped it up with her hair. She cast public opinion to the side and said, I'm going to look into the eyes of my Lord and I'm going to ignore all those around me and I am going to focus and honor and give what I can to the Lord. There sure are those around the room that said, that's immoral. No one does that. Are you crazy? That's a year's worth. That's your life you're throwing at the feet. Hadn't you better go back and reconsider what you've offered? David, when he restored the ark in the Old Testament and brought it back into town, if you remember the story there where he felt so outpouring to the Lord that he put on a linen ephod. Okay? So basically a linen loincloth, and danced and praised and sung to the Lord because his heart was overflowing. His reception back at the house was pretty cold. How, his wife said, could you embarrass me like that? Don't you have your priorities in order? Can't you act right? So where are you with that? Are you willing to come to God and give up your pride? Are you willing to take that and throw it away so that you can be and honor and see the glory of God? Finally here, it's going to cost you some criticism. Okay? There are those who will continually tell you that it's a waste and not worth it. As we sit in this room today, there are hundreds of people that are drive up and down the street and look at the cars in that parking lot and say, why are they wasting their time? Wouldn't it be much better to wash the car, get the house clean, do my shopping, do the things that would make my week a whole lot better? Sometimes the criticism is going to come internally. Maybe the words are that you're not smart enough to teach a Sunday school class. You're not wealthy enough to tithe. I don't have enough vacation time saved up to go on a mission trip. Criticism will happen. So where does it start? With Mary, it started, as I said, because she knew him personally. She had spent the time at his feet learning who he was and what he could do. And it grew to a point that she fully understood, as much as she could, what she had and could give back. And finally, extravagant love results in action. Mary could have thought all of these things in her heart. But if the heart is truly overflowing with the worth of the Lord, it cannot stop at just that. It will result in actions to the Lord and to others. That overflow of love, that pouring out of everything that you have, the loving the Lord with all my heart, my soul, my mind, it can't be stopped. Okay? So let me, in this last few minutes, run long, close with a response that maybe you would have, or I urge you to think about. In Mark, one more slide, it's all right. He had five simple words to describe what Mary did. His words were, she did what she could. She acted. She didn't just think about acting. She didn't say, I'll do something sometime. She didn't act out of obligation or let others act for her or wait to be invited. She did something. She acted out of what she had, not what she wished she had. She was a specific woman with a specific story who acted out of the particulars of her life. She acted because she knew she was loved by Jesus and she wanted to love him back. She acted with what she had, a bottle of perfume. Where she was, at a dinner party, and when it mattered, just prior to his death. Her public expression of commitment to Christ invited others to decide what they would do with him. Her action forced the hands of all present to either say, I accept and I honor the Lord my God, or I'm ready to reject. As a result of her action, she was ridiculed by others, but she was praised by her God. So what if we did what we could? What if we acted? What if we didn't just think about acting, but actually acted? What if it wasn't out of obligation or just to let others act for us? What if we didn't wait to be invited? What if you didn't just wonder if you were going to make a difference, but you took a step out to make a difference? What if we didn't focus so much on what we didn't have and consider what we do have? What is it that we could do right now in this moment? You have a story, you have a skill, you have a worth that God has given to each one of us. And if we believe truly that God loved us, poured his soul, his heart, his everything out for us, then couldn't we take that time and effort and act towards him and towards others in a way that reflected that worth? What if we did what we could? That's all it takes. Let me pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we again come to you knowing your worth and your story. And we give you the praise for that. And as your word has talked to us and placed in our hearts, that in showing that true worth and love, that you will, and through your Spirit, overflow our hearts so that we can learn to pour out to you and to others. To take away the pride and the feelings and the wonderings of what others will think and just focus on you. And through that, that we would walk with you and take what you have provided and love you back. And through loving you, it would expand and spread, and we would love others. Thank you for this time, and we give you all of our heart. In your name, amen.